Hey friend, welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own businesses. If you've listened to the show before, you'll have heard me say that little spiel every episode, and you'll know that, yeah, I definitely do this show for me. I just said it. I selfishly have these conversations and get to gain insights for my own endeavors, but I always want to share it with others, and I always knew I wanted to share it with others. The theory being that if I enjoy these conversations and the guests enjoy these conversations, which I hope they do, then you might enjoy these conversations as well. When I started all of this, I really just assumed that I would get to talk with a lot of my friends that I already have about their businesses. I feel like I have a lot of friends that are already kind of in this space, which absolutely was the case in season one, though definitely met a lot of cool people. However, in season two of this show, I've had just so many amazing opportunities to talk with people I did not know at all going into it, or have only met briefly in passing. And today's guest was very much a stranger before we sat down together, but absolutely became friends by the end of our talk. This week, I got to sit down with Christina Terry of the Crunchy Cactus and Texas Artisans Market, which is a statewide market. It's based right here in Houston, but it focuses on handmade artisanal products. She says that it's very reminiscent of the farmer's market that she grew up with in Northern California. And as you'll hear, her journey took her from some of the most beautiful vineyards in the country out that way to the Gulf Shores of Louisiana, and then eventually to Texas, where her passion for marketing and supporting small business eventually evolved into something that was really bigger than she ever could have imagined. Christina is just one of those super well-connected people, which like feels like it means something coming from me. And she was able to get us access to record in the warehouse section of Post HTX, which is this just really phenomenal art and entrepreneurial space down in town. And it's got this just amazing warehouse that is like multiple football fields big. Just imagine this epic old factory that's been gutted out and made beautiful for all kinds of things, like the event she's going to host there later this year, which will be a two-day market for Texas Artisan Markets. It's going to be super cool. I think I'm going to be there. So anyway, keep an eye out for that. But anyway, we got to record in this space, and it's just not just like one of the coolest places in Houston, but it's just one of the coolest places that I've been, and loved getting to record that. So with all of that, listen in as Christina and I discuss how Runny Noses launched her into entrepreneurship, how she ended up teaching deep water survival, and the lessons she's learned from building one of the fastest growing markets in the state of Texas. Christina Terry with Texas Artisan Markets, mm-hmm. And it's the Crunchy, what's it? I have it here.
The Crunchy Cactus.
The Crunchy Cactus. All right. Yes. With Texas Artisan Markets and the mm-hmm. Crunchy Cactus.
Yes.
Among other things.
Lots of other things.
Lots of other things. Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
For people who might not know, why don't you give us the quick spiel to what it is that you do with these markets, with the elderberry stuff,
sure.
And tea leaf and teas and all that. Well, tell us about what you're doing.
Oh, there's a lot behind it. So I'll just give you the quick, short story.
And then we'll dive in.
Okay, cool. So all of my businesses kind of started off as a solution to a problem. Mm-hmm. So when I had kids get sick, they're little walking germ bags, if you will.
That's very true.
Okay. So I needed something that was all natural and healthy in mm-hmm. order to keep their immune systems boosted. I got into research into what we could do that was safe for children.
Yeah.
And that was elderberry. So mm-hmm. I kind of just messed around with a couple of recipes and made something that my friends kind of were drawn to when we were sampling at my house or, you know, having people over, hanging out. I'd be like, hey, give your kid a, you know, shot of this elderberry.
Yeah.
Protect their immune systems, help them out. So it kind of grew from there. They're like, sell this. Mm-hmm. I'm in three local stores in the Northeast Houston now. And that's been like a 4-year journey.
Yeah.
But that's kind of taken a backseat to Texas Artisan Markets.
Okay.
Which was a concept we launched in 2020, middle of COVID.
Yeah.
Which is not really a time to launch an in-person market.
Sure. Yeah.
But it, at the same time, was a perfect time to do so mm-hmm. because these folks weren't getting a showcase, and something, a renegade, a revolution type happened in the middle of COVID where people were losing their corporate jobs and they were diving into hobbies to make ends meet. And that's kind of where we all came together. A lot of my customers during the shutdown weren't able to purchase elderberry syrup because they had lost their jobs due to layoffs, furloughs. Hey, we just can't afford to pay you anymore.
There was a lot of that.
Yeah, there was tons of it and a lot more than I think people realized. It was really, really bad. The economy was not in a beautiful place. But a beautiful thing came of that. And we wanted to tap into it and really give these emerging artists, creatives, and makers a space where they can feel comfortable providing a personal connection still, but in a safe place, because a lot of people, you know, this is the pandemic. People were scared. Scared of those personal interhuman connections and interactions in person. And so I wanted to make them feel comfortable. And something I didn't mention to you is we had our very first open house style market at my house.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
In the middle of COVID, hey, everyone, let me open my doors and show you 8 amazing artists that I have found through my own customer connections. So we started doing bartering with all of these local makers so they can afford essentially elderberry and help with their, you know, immune support. And we had 8 of those artists in my home. Every single one of them sold out. It was amazing. It was incredible. And it just kind of snowballed from there. We found a first location, which is a backfield in Kingwood where there's literally no natural organic traffic. And I brought 2,500 people out there to support about 34 artists, I think I had.
That's awesome.
In an empty field.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. The vibe, the energy that day, it was... It's something that I'll never forget. And this was just October of 2020, but it feels like yesterday. I remember the feeling, and it was a vibration off of everyone that was there, the patrons, the vendors themselves, just people from the neighborhood coming to check out what is going on over here.
Yeah.
And then we moved into our markets. We moved them into a brewery and distillery setting because drinking and shopping
is fun. Yeah.
It is totally
loosen up some wallets.
Fun. Yes, yeah. Exactly. In a very nice sense. Yes. Totally. That's exactly what we wanted to do. But we wanted to create an atmosphere where it wasn't just for women shoppers. Mm-hmm. We wanted to make sure that the men felt like they belonged at our markets as well. We wanted to make the children feel welcome at our events. So we wanted to partner with breweries and distilleries specifically. Because they have playgrounds for the kids.
Yeah.
They have beer for the dads. And they have shopping for the wives. We wanted to make something that was completely all-inclusive.
Sure.
And so with that kind of came our brand for Texas Artisan Markets as an all-inclusive market.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a vision that we have to not have something that's just for women. Makers, not just something for the men, not just something for the LGBTQ plus community, not just something for BIPOC. We wanted to make sure that everyone felt safe and had a home in one space.
Yeah.
We could all be together. I know I'm like rambling on, but there's like so much passion in my project. And it's really, I call it my project, but it's really the community that we created together through all of these venue partnerships and through our vendor family. We wanted this to be something that just everyone felt welcome at. And when you walk in, you feel that certain vibe, and it's all encompassing. It's warm. It's friendly. It's exciting. And it makes you just want to come back again and again and again.
Yeah. That's an amazing story. and we'll certainly suss it out and go further into all of it. But so at the simplistic level, at the risk of being overly simplistic, it is it's a market for a truly artisan market focusing on handmade and handcrafted goods. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
How do we define that?
Okay. Right?
Where's the line?
Totally.
I'm interested.
I've got this too. Yeah. We've got it on lockdown. I'm from Northern California, been in Texas for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And when we went to markets back in California, it was all high-end artisan stuff. Hand-blown glass, ceramics, leatherwork, silversmiths, beautiful artwork, paintings, abstract, whatever whatever it was absolutely stunning. And when I came here to Texas, I couldn't really find something that had just that vibe.
Sure.
Okay. There was a lot of markets, and there's a lot of great markets out there,
yeah.
but I wanted something different. Mm-hmm. I wanted to attend something that I can show my husband, like, this is what I experienced in California without mm-hmm. actually having to fly out there, because we know sure. how expensive that is. So I wanted to show him something that really spoke to what I was used to. We just couldn't find it.
Yeah.
And so handcrafted and handmade, it really does mean that that piece that you're purchasing, holding, mm-hmm. looking at, connecting with the maker over, that person made it.
Yeah.
They made it with their heart. They made it with their soul. They made it with their hands.
Yeah.
It is something that is completely produced by them.
Yeah.
It is not a bunch of resale items, things that you would buy and piece together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not boutiques, and it's not MLM. MLM is multi-level
yeah.
marketing.
Yeah.
Okay. So for those who don't know,
for sure.
It is, you know, Scentsy and Tupperware. We value and we respect those businesses, mm-hmm. but it just doesn't have a place in our market because of the certain structure and the vibe, if you want. I know I keep saying vibe, and it's
vibe
just like,
is that's a great
it's
word.
A totally good word.
It's fine. It's a great word.
I love it.
We're all about vibes.
I love it.
No, vibes are great.
But that's kind of what it is. It is something that is truly handmade by the person who sells it
yeah.
at the market. And
that makes perfect sense.
There is room for resale.
Sure.
But there is a specific type of resale.
Mm.
It has to be a direct connection to the artisans or makers in that country. So we have one of our vendors, Tesoro Maya. We have Origin Pink. They work directly with those artisans in that country. They have a charitable mission attached.
Yeah.
Proceeds go back to the country. They've actually been out there to make the items with them or see the actual artisans working.
Yeah.
So that kind of resale we do allow in the market.
Okay. Valid. I think that that's great. Obviously, it's your market, so you can do whatever you want to do. But at the same time, I think, as you and I have talked about, you being a guest on this show on very late notice, as we'll both acknowledge that this just happened. And I saw this in a movie somewhere where it was like, good things take time, but great things happen all at once.
Ooh, I like that.
And here we are sitting in this epic,
yes.
I don't know, warehouse? What would you call
it? Yeah,
this?
They call it the warehouse.
The warehouse mm-hmm. at Post HTX.
Yeah.
And this was really quick. So,
yeah.
But all that to say, of as we talked about in prep for this, is that there are a lot of people who reach out to be a guest on this show. And that's one, humbling, because this is a very modest show, as you can see. Thank you. and there are some nuances that I've had to kind of figure out as I very deliberately choose our guests and select who's gets to have this chair and be on this platform. And so much of what I've been looking for is, I think, so many of those same things.
Yeah.
As somebody who's connected to the work.
Yeah.
So people have asked, like, well, would you ever interview Mattress Mac? Maybe, but he is not.
He's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Houston thing, and maybe.
Yeah.
But to some degree, he isn't, like, maybe in the middle of it.
Sure.
Yeah, how many years left is he? I don't know. Maybe 20. I don't know. He seems like he's been at it
he's
forever.
A legend.
But yeah, it's finding people that are really in the middle of that process and connected to the work still. And that that matters a lot to me. So I totally get why you go at that. So let's talk about you, though. Okay.
Oh, God.
Let's back up. You talk about, I mean, so much of this was really born out of you being a mother, and mm-hmm. you started with the elderberry, and then that built out because you had kids, and you're like, I got to keep these runny noses. And yeah, I feel like my younger son, like, had, if he got a sniffle, he had croup. Like, it was just bum bum.
Oh, yeah.
And he had ear infection. And if it was like sniffle, croup, ear infection.
And if it's one kid, it's all the kids.
Yeah, it's just snotty. So I totally get that shaping you. But your story is, right, so Southern Cali or Sonoma.
Yes.
I know that us Texans are like, well, it's California, so okay. It's all the same. But Sonoma's middle. Yeah.
Let's
what's our
let's
geography
look at this,
lesson?
Okay. Northern and Southern California are two different states. Don't get it confused.
Sure.
The
check.
Line stops at San Jose.
Okay.
Basically, San Jose and up, that's Northern California.
Got it.
San Jose and down, that's Southern California. Northern California, it is more of the outdoorsy, hippie type of people. But
okay.
I grew up in Healdsburg, Santa Rosa, Rohnert Park. That area is like, if you were, I guess, to explain it to other people, it is Napa's little sister.
Okay.
That's what Sonoma is.
Great.
It's the better sister.
Yeah. When my wife and I go out there, we tend to hang out in Sonoma. I just saw, you may not know, this may not mean anything to anybody, but Glenn Hansard is my favorite musician. He's an Irish kind of folk rock musician. Mm-hmm. Had a film called Once that won some Academy Awards back in, like, I don't know, 2010 or something. Okay. And he did a show out at a vineyard in Sonoma. And so we flew out there for like a day and watched my favorite artist on this hillside surrounded by this vineyard. Yeah. And it was amazing. So
yeah, it's
big
a total,
fan of
it's
Sonoma.
A total thing. And it's like, it's Napa. Napa's pretentious. It's like the...
Well, I grew up in Dallas and Dallas is pretentious.
So you know this.
So I get the like, I think so maybe like Sonoma is to Napa as
Dallas
Houston is to Dallas.
Ooh, but Austin too. Like, let's just tap into that for a second. Maybe later.
Maybe
but,
later. Okay, so Sonoma,
is,
you grew up there.
Yes, Napa is the big, sexy, pretentious sister of Sonoma.
Got it.
Sonoma is beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's real. It's beautiful. So the markets out there, that is one thing that I will never forget and why it's shaped the way that these markets are out here too.
Well, and it's interesting because when I've gone out there and visited and talked with winemakers specifically, and a couple episodes ago, Ryan Levy is a winemaker here in Houston. They have the only producing vineyard here in Houston city limits. But he and I talked a lot about that area because that's obviously really pivotal to wine culture in America and all that.
Yeah.
But he touched on this, and it's something that I observed when I've gone out there, is that winemakers and vintners are farmers. Mm-hmm. So it's a very agrarian culture, which makes sense that you'd have a lot of these makers around because, yes, there are people who are very sophisticated and really love high, fine wine, but also most of those people are actually just farmers.
Yeah.
And I think that all ties into this kind of like, let's make stuff and share what we've made with one another kind of culture. So that makes sense that like those seeds were planted in you.
It's cool that you get that outside view too, just talking to those vintners, because it really is like that craft is from the ground up, just like all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes a lot of time, right? Obviously generations.
So
you start there, you get a associate's degree in marketing. But then you moved to Louisiana to do oil work.
Oh, we don't want to talk about
that. Talk about that. I mean, it's just this fact, like, I don't know. And you're probably the first person I know who's left Sonoma to go to Louisiana. And I was born in Louisiana, so I can talk about Louisiana.
So I moved to Lafayette, and it was for something that was a chapter of my life that we closed on. A certain male persuasion. It was something that really enlightened my passion. In California, I was kind of just doing the thing, what we always do, and that's work.
Yeah.
And you just fall into place where you think you belong. And I literally fell in the lap of a really amazing couple. And the husband officiated my wedding.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And I did water survival training for the oil field.
What a trip.
Yeah. So I took my marketing and I was doing that for them, but they already had such a great following within all of the OSHA community that they didn't need the marketing. They kind of just said, hey, would you want to do water survival training instead?
Want to do
like,
this?
Sure, why not? I mean, I think maybe that was a marketing thing on their end too. Like he's this big dude and, you know, instead having this California chick do all the water survival training.
That's
it
fair.
Might increase some business. No, I mean, I'm just not
valid.
Being...
Okay. Yeah.
But I basically trained 50 dudes at a time how to survive in the ocean if their helicopter went down, if their rig exploded.
What?
And it was really cool.
That sounds really cool.
Having to unstrap, you know, grown men from an upside down helicopter underwater was not really
that part.
The
not
best
so much.
Part. But yeah. I mean, teaching them, and this is kind of plays into markets now that I'm thinking about it. I'm not there to teach you how to swim.
Yep.
I'm there to teach you how to survive.
How to not die.
Exactly. So like in the market sense, like I'm not there to teach you how to make money. I'm there to teach you how to really dive into your craft and really dive into your passion.
Sure.
And therefore, you'll make money.
Yeah.
Like it all kind of is a domino effect here.
Yeah.
So if you know how to survive, if you know, if your butt's in that water, you're going to know how to swim because it's your only instinctual way to survive.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much talk, I think, in these entrepreneurial circles about like sink or swim and you've got leaps of faith
and
all of that. And what I have found in my personal experience, and I bet through the many things that you've now done, a couple of things that you've done, is that once you throw yourself into one of those situations, you jump out of the helicopter in the water now, and you're like, I have to swim or I'll die.
Yeah.
And that's terrifying, but it's usually the anticipation is worse than the actual reality.
Yeah.
But then once you don't die, you're like, oh, this is okay. Like, I was fine. And then it feels like it maybe lowers that threshold of fear so that the next thing you do, you're like, oh, well, I could do that. Like, I can figure that out because I've already survived X, Y, Z. So
And you can really, really tie that into like any entrepreneurial business too. Yeah, that's cool. I like that. I never even thought about that.
There you go. But I had read an interview of yours, and you'd said that you were in Louisiana. You're obviously not yet marketing in the sense that you're a part of what's but maybe not doing what you studied.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's what took you to Austin, is you were like, or Round Rock or all that, is to some work.
I was actually on my way back to California.
Okay.
And a friend of mine from high school, he's like, hey, just come and hang out. You can rent a room in my place and see what Austin has to offer you.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that actually sounds fun. I'm young. I could do this.
Sure.
I don't have a husband or kids tying me down at that point. And so I was like, sure, whatever, you know, I'll do that. Well, I found myself like being pretty alone. Mm. Of course I had my friend. We were friends since middle school.
Sure.
But he worked a lot. And so I didn't have any friends in Austin, in this big, gorgeous city where I wanted friends. I wanted
it's such a social city.
Exactly. It's a social city. I was young. I think I was 22 at that time.
To be young again. to be 22 again.
I know, right? I feel old. Yeah. But I wanted to make some of those connections. So I got on Match.com.
And that's
how I met my husband.
There you go.
10 years ago.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it worked. So you met your husband, and that kind of like now you're stuck.
Yeah.
In the best way sense possible.
In the best way. I found my partner, my everything, to my biggest support. Mm-hmm. He has been the support for all of my ideas, which are a lot of them. I am an entrepreneur by spirit. My dad still does entrepreneur stuff. Like I grew up in that zone, and I knew that I wanted to just find every facet I could to make stuff happen for people, to help the community, to help small businesses.
Yeah.
But then I see this football player. He played football for UT. He was a Longhorn. And I was like, why is he on here? There must be a story. Mm. I'm a very outgoing person.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very good person.
Yeah, opposites attract.
Balance, baby. Like, it was amazing. And it was just a really cool connection. And then, you know, he got his degree in chemistry, and it brought us down to Houston. And I wanted to hate him. I was like, if I didn't love you so much, I would divorce you.
I mean, it was Louisiana.
For bringing me to Houston.
I mean,
why Houston? Why? Well, that's where oil and gas is, first of all, obviously. Chemistry, oil and gas. But then I got down here and we walked the city, and we really understood that there's a culture.
Yeah.
There's a really cool thing happening here with arts and with food and amazing diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I can do this. Just find me a place with trees.
Sure.
And I was like, that's hard to find in Houston, but the more trees there are, the happier Christina is.
That's fine. Yeah.
You know, we found Northeast Houston, and that's where we call home now, but we wanted to integrate into our city as much as possible. And I think I found a way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's I'd say you
have. That's my transition. California, Louisiana, Texas. Here we are in Houston. This is home.
Yeah. And then you guys meet and you're dating and all of that.
Yeah.
And then now you need to get a job. And so you end up finding marketing work.
Yes.
Right? So you did a few different things, including mom and pops, natural frozen pops,
gosh,
right?
That was so much fun. Yes.
Because it's interesting to me when I start doing these like little digs on people.
I'm all over the place.
You start to see these threads.
The trend.
I'm really interesting to see, like obviously, there was MFE Rentals and TNT Financial Services, which is like, okay, cool. Those are businesses, I'm sure actually taught you a good bit about maybe the more business side or the financial side.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Of a business. But like the mom and pops, natural frozen, like popsicles.
So cool.
That feels like, if I'm like writing this story, it feels like the prelude or the kind of like the foreshadowing
catalyst
of elderberry and making your own stuff.
Yes,
you saw how that was made.
Yep.
So how did you just got connected because you had somebody there?
Oh my gosh, we were looking for jobs to do on the weekend. And back in the day, like, this is when Craigslist was cool and not creepy. Is it even around anymore?
It is around, okay, but it is admittedly more creepy.
Yeah.
But that's crazy that you say that because Joe West was another guest on this season.
Yeah.
And he's this award-winning wedding photographer, and he got his first gig on Craigslist.
There we go. See? Craigslist, MySpace, like all that stuff.
There part was, of the zeitgeist.
There's a reason for those things at that time.
Yeah.
But that's how we found him. We wanted to have some kind of like extra income on the weekends that was fun and that we could do together.
Yeah.
Because like I said before, like my husband and I, we do everything together.
That's great.
Bachelor and bachelorette party together.
Yeah.
We really don't spend much time apart.
Yeah.
And we love it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to find something on the weekends, again, that we would be able to spend time together, but have something that was fun.
Yeah.
And we came across their ad and we're like, we're the perfect people for you. Well, you know, this is really cool. Like the market scene, farmers markets, again, Northern California, mm-hmm. super big there.
Yeah.
And
in Austin, probably a little more established than Houston at the time. Yeah.
Definitely so with the farmers markets. They have mm-hmm. more of a larger type of farmers market mm-hmm. than Houston has. They had the big ones. I mean, like 50 to 60 vendors of people that were actually farmers.
Yeah.
And it's not just a bunch of random stuff. It really is stuff that these people have grown themselves. Breads that they baked fresh that morning. Cheeses that they literally made like
We should have had bread and cheese here.
We missed the mark on that one. Next time, charcuterie board, I've got you, friend.
That's what everybody needs to hear in this podcast is me smacking on some brie.
Well, so mom and pops, like they had a rough start too. They partnered with someone who now has a really big popsicle company. And I won't mention who because we don't want to throw anyone under the bus. But they were partnered with that person who was younger and really took off with a lot of really great ideas.
Mm.
And so we still wanted to give them their proper showcase.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's travel for you. San Antonio, Austin. We were all over the place with their popsicles.
Yeah, there it is. So again, now you see it's because I don't think one of the things we've discussed yet is that while Texas Artisan Markets is based out of Houston, born in Houston, it already is now reaching across the state. So it starts here, but it's in Austin and in Dallas now.
Mm-hmm.
So again, those seeds being planted early on.
Yeah.
And at that time, when you're traveling, you're slinging natural frozen popsicles. what was the vision? Like, was there this image in your head of what life was going to be? Or you're just like, yeah, this is fun for now. And we'll just we'll do something else.
No, it was literally that you just said. It was fun for the moment. It gave us some kind of like creative outlet that we can connect with the community and be social outside of our corporate jobs. And it was really just a cool family environment that was a farmer's market. There were market kids there. That's what they were called. And there were these sweet little kids of the actual farmers that would just run around the market, hang out in all the different booths. And I was like, babe, when we have kids, they're going to be market kids. Like, we'll make this happen. Because they're just it's so cute. And the environment that they created was just so relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, even though we were working on the weekends, It was relaxing. It was nice to work on the weekend.
You're having a good time.
Yeah. We had a blast.
And then it was just, okay, well, we'll just see what life has for us.
Yeah.
Along the way of doing all those different things, is that how it always has been? Is just kind of this open-handed? Or have you had this like, I'm going to go do this. And then you've had to let go of certain ideas? Or how is that?
I always knew I had a vision where I wanted to help small businesses. I just didn't know exactly what that was going to look like.
Sure.
So after having all the corporate jobs, I worked for MFE down here, which is a really big tool rental company for the oil industry. And I was their marketing. I was VP of marketing.
Cool.
And I traveled all over the U.S. doing conventions for them. And I love those personal interactions and connections. It all keeps coming back to that. I'm a very personable person. I'm very social. I love talking face-to-face with people.
Yeah.
And so as much as I love doing that, it was still the stark corporate world. And I was like, oh, I got to get myself out of this.
Yeah.
And so then I did freelance marketing for small businesses and really got into that. And then, of course, I did a little bit of real estate. I worked marketing for Remax.
Represent. Well, not Remax. We're going to represent Remax.
Yes,
represent real estate.
Yes, exactly. Good. Yeah. We have that real estate connection.
Yeah.
But I did it for small teams because I wanted to help them build their small team portfolio and their platform and really be able to be everything for that team so they can have someone to rely on. So then freelance marketing happened after that and then stumbled to markets, which this thread, like there's a needle that just kept going all throughout my life. I knew where it was kind of going, the direction that it wanted to go. And now we have this like full necklace, if you will.
Yeah.
That I've created. I love it.
That's a great analogy that you've kind of been weaving along and picking up these different pieces. And I like the necklace analogy.
The necklace is cool.
the way that I've kind of talked about, because I feel very similarly, is that I have had a lot of plans. I'm like, that's the thing. I'm going to be that guy. Like, here I go. And I always hold those relatively loosely. Like, well, okay, that didn't work out. So like, now it's this thing. Yeah. Like, I'm going to go over here.
Yep.
And the way that I've described it before is, like, if we're talking martial arts, it's a very like drunken master Jackie Chan style of like progressing, which is, it doesn't always look like there's a lot of sense in these movements, but somehow I keep like moving forward and not like falling on my ass.
Yeah.
And I think those threads though are probably the things that guide us of like, there's certain things that go through, whether it's like, well, I love people and I want to connect with people and whatever I do. And that's certainly been one of those threads in my story.
That's awesome. And that's how we connect.
And here we are. To get back to the marketing piece of things.
Okay.
You had done kind of this freelance marketing.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've been having a lot of conversations with people about as they come to me and say, hey, will you make videos for us, like through Rusty Gates Media?
Okay, cool.
One of the things that I keep coming up against is, well, sure, we can do that. Like, you can pay me and I will make a video for you. Please reach out and I'm happy to talk through that. But for many of them, I've had to say, but before we do that, I think you need to have some other conversations and figure some other things out, which is like, what's your brand identity? Yeah. What is it? You're obviously working with a lot of small makers and people who are just now in that space.
Yes.
What do you think the struggle is for people in defining their brand?
Yes.
What's the thing that keeps people from figuring it out?
When it comes to like creating a brand within your company for a small business, a creator, a maker, an artist, it's hard because we have so many great ideas. So like latching on to one different brand identity that you're kind of putting yourself in this little space. Like this is who I am, but it's not who I am because I'm so many different things.
I'm this vibrant.
Exactly.
Human being. Yeah.
There are certain artists and creatives that will find their certain niche and that will help to create their brand identity. But I don't like when I see these types of people put themselves in a box because that's not what they are. Mm-hmm. They are a million different things all at once. And that's what makes a creative person a creative person. Mm-hmm. You cannot put them in a box.
Yeah.
So can I bounce on a little story here?
Please.
I freaking love this.
I'd love it.
I was downstairs at the coffee place. So post HTX, this is where we are right now. Yep. We're actually in one of our creative spaces. Like this is going to be a 2-day concept market in this gorgeous warehouse. It's freaking huge. But I was downstairs getting coffee before a meeting because not that I have, you know, enough energy. I need more.
It's fine.
I saw the barista wearing a pair of earrings and I go, oh my gosh, is that I Plant and Clay, Cindy Amaya? Did she make those earrings? Mm. And she goes, oh my gosh, yeah. We had like this micro market that popped up one day outside. And I said, I know those earrings.
Yeah.
And so I texted a picture, like a selfie with me and the barista this morning. And I sent it to my friend, Cindy, who owns I Plant and Clay. She's like this really cool, like I call her my little hipster earring maker. She's amazing at what she does. And I work with a lot of artists and she's very noticeable. Mm. Her brand, like she's created this brand for herself without even trying. Like she, not that she didn't try, but like the brand kind of came together. So when you see Nike, like your shoes right now, it's obvious.
Yep.
Because of the check mark. Yep. We know Nike. We know their brand because every single piece of their clothing, of their accessories have that on there.
Yeah.
She doesn't, you know, but it's a very distinctive look to her jewelry that when you see it, you're like, that's I Plant and Clay. That's Cindy Amaya. We have another one, Abner Hats. when someone's wearing an Abner hat, you know it's an Abner hat.
Yeah.
The jewelry that I'm wearing today, this is Poppy Collective Co. When artists see this, they're like, I know that jewelry. I have a collection too. So when they create their brand, it's not really on an actual logo. It's not really something that's one thing. It's a distinctive look to their business. It's a cool thing.
Well, and it's interesting because you and I've talked about it, and I've never gotten any bad feedback from this, but like I certainly have worked to build a brand.
Yeah.
Right. I want people to recognize me and know my name and
yeah.
to use that then to build relationships with people, to use that then to highlight other people. Yeah. Sure. Does it stroke my own ego? Yeah. I want to be known. Who doesn't want to be known and loved? That's like a human thing.
Especially in a big city too. It's hard.
I want to be known and loved. But I've worked to build a brand. You and I talked about the accessories that we wear and how like a part of that is building that familiarity. I think it came up on one of the earlier episodes this season of like branding or marketing is like building trust through familiarity or something along those lines.
I heard that and that was like really cool.
Yeah. And I think that means not everything has to be the same.
No.
But I think that there is it's about consistency. Maybe that's it.
That's,
right? It's the consistency of how you present yourself, consistency of,
100%.
It, like if I showed up in a suit, people would be like, what is happening? Like this is an issue.
I showed up without my sunglasses, people would be like, are you okay?
Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering as other, entrepreneurs or people who want to be are listening to this, I wonder what the advice is that we could give them is to say like, figure out what it is that you love.
Yeah.
Figure out what it is that you are excited to promote and share about yourself. About one of the ways that I had defined this early in my career when I was really just focusing on the real estate. And I was like, well, what do I share on my Instagram? Because that felt like a grab bag. I had gotten off social media when I was working my corporate job. I think at a certain point I was like, why am I playing this game? I don't see the point anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gotten off. And then when I was getting into real estate, I was like, oh shit, like I've got to be here. I've got to show up.
Yep.
But then I was like, well, what do I share? Right. I didn't want it to just be pictures of my kids.
Yeah.
Like though I want to share pictures of my kids because
people would love that.
Super cute. Yeah. Great engagement. And so what I eventually settled on for my like description in my Instagram bio was like HTX realtor, family man, and serial hobbyist. Done. And I was like, okay, if it fits in one of these three categories, I can post it. That's the rule. And if it doesn't fit there, like, then that's fine. Like, go somewhere else. How does that hit you? You're the marketing expert here. So
I know. And marketing for, we have like 750 vendors under our wings. And marketing for each individual one, yet trying to like continue with a cohesive look is really freaking hard.
Yeah.
Filters have been my best friend. So like with everyone's different creations, when we do those vendor spotlights, because we like to highlight our vendors before a market. So they'll send us, different little tidbits about their company, something interesting about themselves, their social links, and then a couple photos. Everyone's different.
Yep.
I mean, everyone's brand looks different.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I just put like a mass filter on those just to create that kind of like cohesiveness.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do that. And again, like we just want, we want our brand to speak to everyone. So we don't want to put our own selves in a box when it comes to marketing our specific company.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that we really are reaching all different kinds of people and the masses. And there's no specific content that I really try to place on there, except for, again, I don't post pictures of my salad. Actually, I did once because I was using a hot sauce from one of my vendors, Lady Fever, which is
but that's
like
the thread,
though.
The thread is, what you can expect here is people who are part of this collective and that you're championing and supporting. So if people are following that account, they know what to expect.
Yeah. And so it's all based on the connections and partnerships that I have. So Post HTX, Railway Heights, B52 Brewery, Megaton Brewery. Yeah. Those are all places here in Houston. And then Austin, we have Deep Eddy Vodka and a bunch of other different distilleries and breweries. And then Dallas, we're working with City of Dallas. And as well as a couple other breweries, but I can't like name it yet.
Okay.
Cool things happening. But we have so many different brands and identities and companies and logos and trademarks and all this kind of stuff that we work with. So there really isn't something that's super cohesive. It's just really to speak to everyone. Yeah.
It's but it's, I think it's what you're doing. I think that's the consistency.
I always forget.
I was like, well, I don't know if I've talked about this on the show or not. We'll see. But and if people actually listen to enough episodes that they would remember.
Yes.
But
let's do it.
I had made a home tour video for one of my listings, and I was like, do the YouTube thing, right? And I'd hired a videographer to follow me around. He's like 18 and he was great, and he moved to Vancouver, and I'm still mad at him about
it.
And I tell him like once a quarter, hey, move back here and I'll hire you. But I make this video. It's really good in my personal opinion. And I go to Reddit, right, online, and I share it on the Houston subreddit. And like a bunch of people got mad at me. Like they were like, this sucks. Why this is spam? Oh. Why this is here? Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm a people pleaser. So these random strangers
that I
pissed off on the internet like really like bothered me. I was like, oh no, I was like, I didn't mean to.
You stayed up crying a little bit at night.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. And I engaged a couple of them in conversation just like, hi, can you explain to me why this is wrong?
Yeah.
Like, why, what did I do that was so wrong?
What's
versus
abrasive?
This other guy who's posting these like little documentaries about areas of Houston. And they said like, well, you're selling this house. And so it's like we were all hanging out at a bar talking about Houston. And then you walked in and were like, hey, guys, do you want to hear about this really cool house that I'm selling? It's so cool. Look at it. Look at the floors. Aren't they good floors? Come look at it. And they were like, that's a dick move. Like, because you're not respecting the etiquette like of this space.
Yeah.
And here's the reason this is this incredibly long tangent to make
point. I know that there's a nugget here.
I appreciate that.
I'm about
Faith.
To get some wisdom.
Which is to say, like, I think that all of these spaces that we share things, social media, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, whatever, especially as a business, is they each have their own etiquette, like their own space. And people are there and they're hanging out. And they,
each different platform too.
Each different platform has its own kind of rules versus like a nightclub versus a coffee shop versus et cetera.
Totally.
And I think that one of the things that I think we as small businesses don't always recognize is the etiquette of that space and to say, hey, if you're going to show up here, you have to follow these rules.
Yeah.
And I think with Instagram, TikTok, it's like, well, you have to show up authentically. And if you're not, like they'll smell it from a mile away and be like, oh, that's... You're a door-to-door salesman.
Yes.
You don't belong in this place.
100%.
Because it is. It's my friends and my family, and there's a cat video, and there's this funny thing.
Yep.
And then if you're there saying, like, hi, who do you know who wants to buy or sell real estate?
It's got to be relatable. It's got to be personal.
Yeah. So I think maybe that's where we can, with the marketing side of things, is I think, like, one, you have to kind of figure out how can you consistently show up, and how can you show up in a way that is engaging, and people want to spend time with you.
Well, and engaging is like, that's a key word right there too, but relatable is also a key word.
Yeah.
So yes, you can make all these goofy videos and stuff on your social platforms. Let's just talk about Instagram because Instagram is my absolute favorite.
Yeah.
Like that's the bread and butter for my business.
We're millennials, we can just say
this is what it is. And so like, I mean, we grew up with Facebook and Facebook is good. And there is a demographic on there that loves to shop at our markets, okay? But we also have that younger demographic that we want to tap into as well. Instagram is like, it's like chef's kiss, beautiful. We love to market on there, but you have to be relatable. Reels scares the shit out of my vendors. Like there's a lot of people that they don't want to put their face on there.
Yeah.
Listen, you don't have to. Mm-hmm. It can be a reel about you on the wheel making that ceramic piece. It could be you putting together a clay earring. It literally is anything to catch the interest in and be like, oh, I want to know how she actually made that I am going to purchase.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing. And to see that like the work that is behind all of these creative pieces.
Certainly.
It involves the community so much more and knowing what's behind the scenes. Mm. So like those behind the scenes shots are so important. It's so relatable. It's so interesting to the public. They want to know, how did you make that?
Yeah.
Like how long did that take you? And when they actually realize like how long it actually took them, they're like, oh my God, that's why you're charging $80 for a ceramic mug. I get it. And I'm going to totally buy that mug.
Yeah.
And so being relatable, being personable, if you want to create goofy videos of yourself, like dancing,
great,
holding, you know, a beautiful piece of artwork, cool.
Yeah.
That's engaging. That's fun. And it's interesting. So your personality, don't be afraid to let it shine,
yeah,
because these interpersonal, in-person, connectable type of markets, they're going to see the real you.
Yeah.
Because you're right. You're right there. Like, yeah, you can't run.
Well, and letting it shine doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be hyper extroverted totally like us.
No.
Right. Or no, because that's totally who we are. And so that is,
yes,
what we're shining. But like,
exactly,
whereas my wife is, I think maybe like your husband,
yeah,
is a little bit more reserved,
yes,
and is this incredibly hard worker, is, yes, incredibly thoughtful.
Very analytic.
Always. Yeah. And always putting people, other people above herself.
Yes. Oh my God. And, yes.
Which is why I get to have the spotlight as,
yes,
much as I do. Cause she's like, you can have it. I don't,
yeah,
I don't want it.
My husband too.
But that's, hilarious, but there's a way to let that shine.
Yeah.
Right. And to show up in that way,
yep,
and be present.
Yeah.
This is going to be another long rambly story to make
do
a
it
point, but I think you just
it
shared something that was so insightful that,
oh,
as I'm
you
thinking, woo, through it, I'm like, oh, that's the thing.
Cool.
Like, even for me as I make stuff. So before I got into real estate, I was doing executive search, specifically in like the church and nonprofit sector.
Cool.
So we would work with churches who,
yeah,
lost their pastor for whatever reason, or they left or whatever, and they would, mm-hmm, need to find somebody. And through that, I get to have these conversations with these pastors from these, let's say, outdated churches.
Sure.
Right? Really traditional in a lot of ways.
Get it.
And we're losing people. There was not a lot of engagement, which I think, like, again, we can, like, as we start applying this to our social media worlds, we're like,
yep,
oh, okay, these are very similar things that are happening sometimes. And they would say, well, what do we need to do? Right? Like, do we need to change our name? Do we, yeah, need to, you know, add a drum set and a light show,
yes,
and smoke machines and some,
yep,
guy in skinny jeans. Like, is that
some
like,
guy in skinny
like
jeans,
is that going to be the thing, yes, that then like attracts people to us? And the advice that I would give them is, I was like, don't do that. That's
yeah,
all of the wrong things to do. I think I would say, find, like, go back and do everything you can to remember why your tradition is the, ooh, way that it is.
Yes.
Why did your tradition have these habits or rituals? Why did they emphasize X, Y, Z?
Yes.
What's the history and meaning between this specific artwork or the layout of this, yeah, room or whatever it is? Go find those reasons and be captivated by them,
yeah,
and then share why you're that way. And,
yeah,
then you're different. Because if you get rid of all of those, the history, and,
mm-hmm,
just strap on all of the cool, hip things that everybody else is doing,
yeah,
you're not going to be you anymore, and,
no,
you're just going to blend into the crowd of everybody else.
Exactly.
And sure, maybe you attract some new folks for a little bit,
yeah,
but it's going to be short-term gains because there's no roots there. And
100%.
I think diving into, that's why I think I like on these shows,
yeah,
to say, let's go back.
Yeah.
And let's dig into the history, because I've said this to you a couple times now, but I feel like as I've gotten a little older and a little,
yeah,
more successful and found my voice a little bit,
mm-hmm,
the more and more I look like what I wished I looked like at 16.
Yeah.
Right? Like my 16,
yes,
I like, I feel like I'm actively working to make my 16-year-old version of myself happy.
Yeah.
And
like, I
like,
feel like I'm super cool now.
Yeah.
And so, like, I know where I'm supposed to be now.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
being
but
true to yourself.
Yeah. And it's that. It is saying, no, why did that matter to me? And so,
yeah,
I think what you were saying,
like, it,
when it came to the social media and the branding, which was to say, like, show up and shine who you are.
Yeah.
And you want to make reels great, but you don't have to. And I think that,
yeah,
if there's advice that I could give to myself or to other people, it'd be that, which is to say, know why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, just know that why. And then that's the thing you broadcast,
yeah,
is because it's like, well, why am I making this video? Anything,
mm-hmm,
you do, if you're making a reel, why are you making a reel?
Yeah.
Is it because you just want views? Is that gonna help your business? Or are you looking to build relationships?
Yeah.
Say, I want to make a video so that I walk away with one new friend or one new meaningful connection.
Bigger
or,
picture stuff, people,
yeah,
like bigger picture stuff. That's what's really going. It's not all about like, I need more followers. I need more views. I need more, you know, money.
Mm-hmm.
If you show your passion and your heart and your soul through what you do, and you show your true self being like essentially true to yourself,
mm-hmm,
and to your craft, and remembering where you started and how all of this became to be what it is right now, like that's what's going to be that relatable energy, that,
yeah,
relatable personality that people want to engage with. It's not just a funny video.
Yeah.
It's really showing your passion through a video, showing your passion through photos, showing your passion on a social media presence, however it is, mm-hmm. to be that relatable person that people can connect with. Connection is such an important thing, especially after all of those COVID lockdowns.
Sure.
Connection, human connection was lost. Yeah. A lot of it was lost. And having that specific showcase that you can actually have those interpersonal connections and touch people physically, emotionally, yeah. and mentally is so important right now. And that can shine through your social media. We created this space so that people can have that in person, but you can still have that on social media platforms. They're doing so much to give us mm-hmm. that opportunity, the reels, the stories, the yeah. videos. It used to be called IGTV. Now it's not anymore because yeah. that's like totally not cool.
Yeah.
But it's a platform that if you're not comfortable being in person either, you can still make a presence for yourself.
Yeah.
Behind a camera and not be in person. If you're still a little bit gun shy about coming out and having that in-person interaction and you're still not feeling yeah. safe or comfortable, totally cool. Instagram, Facebook, mm-hmm. like there's platforms out there that you can still help your business. So whether or not you're even doing the markets with us, like get on there.
Yeah.
Put yourself on this presence where you can make those connections. If you're say you do a reel and it's about you, like I said, just literally throwing some clay on a wheel mm-hmm. and putting up this gorgeous face. Someone's going to comment on there and be like, wow, I wish I was in that space. That looks so peaceful.
Yeah.
You must love what you do. Done. You've already made that connection.
Yeah. And then
like, it's really
then,
that easy.
And then say something back, right?
Yes,
and like,
exactly.
Yeah. I do love it what is, I do and have that conversation.
Yeah. It's a very peaceful space and all of my beautiful ceramic yeah. pieces, like when you bring that home, you'll feel that peace and that love and that serenity that was in that zone when I made that piece. And like yeah. now you have that in your house. And so every time you use that mug to have your morning coffee, sit there and just like breathe it in and remember the space that it was made in.
Yeah.
It's just like so cool.
It's so good. I wholeheartedly believe that social media relationships are real relationships. I have friends that I actually only know through the internet and I've never met in person. I mean, yeah. I could name five that I met online. Yeah. I liked their stuff. I'm like, this is awesome. And I'm here for it. And I'm yeah. going to keep showing up. I'm going to be your cheerleader. And I'm not going to get anything from it. Yeah. And that's okay. Other than because like I got to see your stuff. Yes. And that actually is the thing that I yeah. got from it. I got to see this cool thing you made. And yep. for as long as you want to make it, I'm going to be like in your corner cheering you on and supporting you. And those are real relationships. I know that you guys have an application process
yeah.
for becoming a vendor and joining yeah. the market. One, who should be considering applying?
Okay.
And two, what's that process?
Okay. So I guess it really brings it back to the core value of our company. And it's two things. It's materialistic and it is personable. So materialistic meaning like what is it that you make? So the people that we want to apply to the market are people that really, truly pour their heart and soul into their creation. So it is something that is handmade and crafted by the person who sells it. But we also want to make sure that you're kind of creating intentional pieces, things that you really want to see go to a home and know that that is going to be loved and cherished just like when you made it. And so we really focus on leathersmiths, silversmiths, ceramicists, any kind of art, whether it be block print work, abstract art, or something mm-hmm. that's like really off the wall, we're totally about it. Things that we want to apply to our market are really things that the world kind of needs to bring them a little bit of happiness.
Okay.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it really is. It's like a little piece of happiness from your heart that you want to share with someone else. So that's kind of like the interpersonal part of it. The spiritual part of it, the emotional part of it is just like something that really, really speaks to you. And mm-hmm. that is a small piece of your heart that you are creating for another person to take home
yeah.
to their families. And then the more like hardline facts is like, yeah, ceramics and leather work and things that are trendy in a generational type of aspect. It's kind of hard. I don't want it to all be what's in right now.
Mm.
So yeah. glass blowing, like that's been around for centuries.
Yeah.
Bring it. Love it.
Sure.
Any kind of artistry. My mom used to do ceramics. So like I grew up in that. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge, like you open the cabinet, to get a coffee mug. It is all my artists that are nice. Within our community. Yeah. I don't have anything from, you will not see any Target mugs in there, even though God bless Target. I love to, I guess, integrate everything that is a piece of my mm-hmm. artist community in my own home life.
That's great.
So like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
I want usable pieces that are from all generations. Mm-hmm. So we're really speaking to all demographics too. So I know I kind of went off on a tangent there. But everyone is welcome to apply.
Sure.
There is a curatorial process where we look at every single application that comes through. We look at your social media sites. We do a lot of background work. So like every application process, I don't charge for my application process.
That's great.
Eventually in the Maybe. Future, I might have yeah. to, just because I might have to hire someone on to help me with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it takes
but
time
it's,
to
it's
review
literally all me.
Consider it. Yeah.
It's all me. So when we go through an application, it's a good, like, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but we get 20 to 30 applications a day. So like 10 minutes per application.
Yeah.
It's a lot to process.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah,
it's a lot to process, because I want to know within that application, I want to know your story. Like, mm-hmm. what's your why? Why did you start creating what you create?
Yeah.
Like, what's your story? What's your platform? What do you want the world to know? Mm-hmm. Because that's what the vibe is when you walk in here. You walk in and you feel all of these stories and the heart and the soul just radiating in the building. Mm-hmm. Boom. That's what it is. So that's the number one thing we look at in the application process. Then we look at your actual work. And we're like, okay, this is really great.
Yeah.
We could see this. How long you been in business? What other markets do you do? What is your social presence?
Yeah.
How long have you been doing it? When did this start? And a lot of it, the answer is during COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Certainly. I've had multiple guests on who started their businesses because of all of that. And they're like, well, I've got the time or I have to or whatever.
It forced you into your own creative space. So it really forced a person to realize, like, am I a creative or am I corporate?
Yeah.
And like, you know, trying to pivot and transition into something that you aren't really comfortable in, but you know that you're really good at.
Mm-hmm.
It forced people to use that creative side of their brain.
Yeah.
And it's cool to see what comes out of it.
It is.
It's all different. Yeah, there might be like 200 clay artists, but each one is so individual in their own aspect. So yeah, there's a lot of things that go into the curatorial process of an application.
Yeah.
Okay. So sending your application, please. Like, I open the doors to anyone and everyone. We are not a one size fits all. Like, we're all over the place with who we let in, who mm-hmm. we want to be part of our team and our family. And if you don't make it in, we always encourage to reapply.
Yeah.
We try to create as many spaces for people as possible. And like, partnering with these larger creative spaces like Post HTX and Railway, that's really going to give us a catalyst to blow this out of the water.
Yeah.
And help as many people as possible.
That is excellent.
It's the goal.
I love it. You obviously have a deep passion for these makers and promoting other people. I think you and I share in that like, when mm-hmm. we're at our best, we're just taking all of this energy and pointing it at somebody else.
Yeah.
And it's obvious through what you've already built and what you are building that, people are really going to benefit from being a part of this, but also just benefit from showing up and walking around and hearing these stories and learning about the makers that are all around them, the moms and the corporate people who left their jobs and the creatives who've been doing this since they were six and all of it.
It really helps. It helps to build that community, and it helps our own community who actually come to frequent these events and purchase or just look and talk.
Yeah.
It really helps them to understand, like, there's a bigger world out there. There's a bigger world than Amazon and Target and Walmart. Like, this world of creative makers, artists, whatever you want to call them, that world is like, it's way bigger than Amazon.
Yeah.
If you look at the big picture of like, wow, there are so many beautiful people that create beautiful things. Like, how do you think that all of those ideas for a vase that you would buy at Target, where did that come from? That's a creative person that made that.
Yeah.
But if we look on a smaller scale, and you actually want to put money back into your community, you want to help your local economy, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
There are statistics out there that will just like absolutely blow your mind about the money that people spend at these markets like mine
mm-hmm.
that actually go back into your own economy, that go back into your own community.
Yeah.
Like, it's a beautiful thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Any advice that you'd give to yourself as you were leaving Southern California, heading out to Louisiana to do dive survival training?
I didn't know who I was back then.
Sure.
And I didn't have a clear path of where I wanted to go. So I think like my advice to myself back then would be to just trust yourself.
Mm.
Know that you'll be okay. And that kind of, it reverbs through all of the entrepreneurs that I work with, all the small businesses. Trusting yourself, trusting your process. Mm-hmm. There's a meaning for everything that you do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're like, what is the purpose?
Yeah.
Like, why am I going through this right now? It doesn't seem right. It doesn't feel right. Trust the process. Trust yourself. Your heart will lead you to where you're supposed to be.
Yeah. I love
it. So like, yeah, that's the big thing. I didn't know where I was going to go, but I knew I wanted to go somewhere. And so just continue on. Don't give up on yourself because no one around you is giving up on you.
Yeah.
That's done. Awesome. Boom.
That's it. Very good. Well, Christina, thank you so much for the time. Texas Artists and Markets. Y'all are doing some amazing things. And I know that y'all have got some big things coming up and
big
in store.
Things.
So we will certainly push people your way.
Yes.
And we look forward to seeing what happens.
Yes. There's going to be a big rebrand, which we're not going to say too much about right now. But there will be a name change.
Yeah.
And there will be a directional change. And Texas Artists and Markets is still going to be the same thing to its core.
Yeah.
Just with a different face.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
A huge thank you to Christina and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. I really do hope these conversations inspire you in your own journey, either in or towards entrepreneurship, and show you that really anybody can do it. And I say that because of me, not because of my guests. My guests are amazing and it makes sense that they're awesome. If you haven't done so already, you can find Christina on Instagram to check out her elderberry products, follow at thecrunchycactus.co, and to see all that's going on with Texas Artisan Markets, both here in Houston and all over the state, you can follow at Texas Artisan Markets. And if you're interested in being a vendor, either here in town or in Austin or up in Dallas, you can visit their website of the same name, texasartisanmarkets.com. This is your first time tuning in. We have interviews available with entrepreneurs from all kinds of backgrounds, including winemakers, musicians, fitness trainers, and personal electric vehicle rentals, and more. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. I'd love to hear from you. Houston Made is produced and hosted by me, Rusty Gates. A special thanks goes out to Luke Bronner with Milieu Media for continued support of the show and to Mac Ryan Creative for collaboration on our artwork. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. And Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit MilieuMedia.com.